You don't have to be dogmatic to reject that Zeus or Apollo or any of the other dead gods. I mean, we all reject these gods. We don't have to prove their absence. I mean, this is one of the fallacies of religious argumentation, the idea that the atheist has to prove the absence of God. Nobody's proved the absence of Zeus. And yet everyone's behaving as though the God of Abraham has a completely different status than these thousands of other dead gods. And he frankly doesn't.
That's Sam Harris again, author of Letter to a Christian Nation and the End of Faith, one of the new atheists and probably its principal spokesman at this point in time. We're responding to the arguments of the new atheist with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery during this hour of Issues, Etc. You know, one of the claims that's often made by the new atheists, not all of them, but many of them, is that Christianity has wrought more evil than good, and I think that is simply false. If you look like at an organization like LCMS World Relief, what they are doing selflessly in the name of Christ crucified for those in need around the world, that's just one bit of evidence that Christianity's, on the balance, its influence and its effect in the world is quite positive. Find out more about what LCMS World Relief is doing in concern for both body and soul by going to our website, issuesetc.org, or you can get a hold of Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief and donate. Call 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438. Dr. Montgomery, how would you respond to what we just heard there from Sam Harris, where he says, just like we don't feel the need to disprove the existence of Zeus, we shouldn't feel the need to disprove the existence of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob?
Well, the point has never been to disprove. The point has been to prove. There was never any evidence for the existence of Zeus as such. In contrast to that, we have the case for the resurrection of Jesus Christ, the historical evidence that God was in Christ reconciling the world unto himself. So this is just a straw man. Harris implies that all religious people do is to say, you can't disprove my God. Well, there are such laymen and theologians. Harvey Cox is one of them, as we've already said. But historic Christianity has always taken the positive view. It's always taken the burden of proof upon itself to show that, in fact, God does exist. And that can be shown in any number of ways. It can be shown, as we've already pointed out, by the second law of thermodynamics. It can be shown by the case for Jesus Christ, the historical case for Jesus Christ. It can be shown by the impact of Christian experience, and so on and so on and so on. Obviously, neither Harris nor Dawkins has spent any time with the historic apologists for Christian faith, Aquinas. Or, goodness, if we come to the present time, C.S. Lewis. They never refer to these people. If I may emphasize to your listeners, if listeners have any doubt that there is a powerful, overwhelming case for the existence of God and for the truth of Christian faith, what they ought to do is to turn up in Strasbourg, France, for 2 weeks at our International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. It's not expensive, and it's an opportunity to participate in the only Institute of Advanced Studies in Apologetics in the world.
By the way, there are only two spots open for this next summer's Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights in Strasbourg, France. And to find out more, grab one of those spots. Look at the What's New section of our website, issuesetc.org. Right there, you'll find a link to a brochure for the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights every summer in Strasbourg, France. A chance to sit at the feet of Dr. Montgomery and other great apologists as they teach there during that 2 weeks in, I will say, having been there last summer, one of the most beautiful spots on the planet. There's no doubt about it. And one of the most beautiful cities in Europe. Dr. Montgomery, it's very commonly said there are no atheists in foxholes. Here's how Ellen Johnson of American Atheists responds to that.
It's demeaning to atheists. It's saying that under very dire circumstances or frightening situations, atheists will stop being atheists. They will start to be leaving. And this is really just a wish on the part of the religious because it's not based in fact.
Dr. Montgomery, let's first of all examine what it is often meant by there are no atheists in foxholes? And should we stop using that if it's, as she says, demeaning to atheists?
Well, I've never used that, for one thing, because I've never been in the military. I've never been in a foxhole. And it would be very difficult to demonstrate that under extreme military conditions, everybody believes in God. I don't know that that's the case. The point of that phrase is certainly that when it's a matter of life or death, people face these issues much more directly. And I suppose this leads us to Pascal, Pascal's wager. Pascal said, suppose all of this were true and you didn't believe it. If all of it were true and you didn't believe it, then presumably you'd go to hell. On the other hand, if all of it was false and you did believe it, the worst that could happen is that you would end up with the finest moral code and the best moral example possible. So I suppose no atheists in foxholes thing is a way of emphasizing the fact that people maybe will look at this whole issue of God's existence a little bit differently when they're teetering on the ragged edge of eternity. But I don't think that this is the issue at all. And it is fascinating to me that these new atheists never focus on the real issue. And the real issue is the positive evidence for the truth of the God who revealed himself in Jesus Christ. They talk about gay marriage. They talk about jihad. They talk about stem cell cloning. They talk about atheists in foxholes. And it seems to me that all of this is a gigantic smokescreen to avoid the central issue. But, of course, if I were an atheist, I guess I'd do the same thing. Because if you go to the central issue, atheism falls.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org. Calling from Valley Park, Tim, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. I like this conversation because about 6 months into my Christian walk, I was introduced to an atheist. And if you work on these arguments, Christianity stands. But here's my question, because I've heard it said that the atheist, by definition, is asserting a universal negative, which is an illogical position. That is to say, there is no God in the universe. Is that a valid argument?
All right, Tim, that's a very good question. Thank you much for listening and for the question as well. Dr. Montgomery.
Well, it certainly is an illogical argument because there's no way in the world that you could be present at every possible location in the universe and check out whether there might be a God there. And you certainly couldn't check this out in the past, and you couldn't check it out in the future. But it doesn't seem to me that again is the real center of the problem, because you likewise can't effectively assert any universal negative. You know that there isn't a gremlin somewhere. I would like to shift this whole business from the negative to the positive. I want to know whether there is, in fact, sufficient positive evidence for God's existence and for his having revealed himself such that it's incumbent upon us to face this. And if we can move it in that direction, which, of course, is not the direction that Sam Harris or Dawkins or any of the rest of them want to move it, if we can move it in that direction, then we see that these people are absolutely off base when they claim that religion is simply a matter of mysticism, personal experience, or whatever. In the case of Christian faith, it's a matter of fact. It's a matter of fact. God revealed himself in the history of Israel, and he revealed himself by sending his own son for our salvation. And that is the case that we have to make.
Sam Harris, author of Letter to a Christian Nation and The End of Faith, has a term of art that he likes to use. It's dogmatic or dogma. Here's what he has to say about that.
Well, no, I'm not being dogmatic. Dogmatism is when you believe things strongly without evidence. I mean, when we have evidence, we talk about the evidence. When you have good arguments, you talk about the arguments. It's when you have to start accepting things on faith that you start reaching for dogmas. Because faith really is, frankly, the permission people, religious people, give one another to believe things when reasons fail. And this is not what we do in science. This is not what we do in every other area of our lives, really, when we talk about our view of the world.
Well, Dr. Montgomery, what do you make of his definition of faith?
Well, it shows that not only is he a lousy scientist, he's a terrible epistemologist. The fact of the matter is that no evidence for factual things reaches 100%. When you want to cross the street, you look carefully to see what your chances are. And assuming that a roadrunner is not coming along or a Porsche, maybe your chances are 80% of getting across the street with your arms and legs intact. But it's never 100%. You know, we've all seen the roadrunner cartoons, right? So what you do is you combine the evidence at the level that it exists, and you combine this with faith. Faith is jumping the gap from the evidence to certainty. And most people, when they go across the street, take 100% of themselves. They don't take just 80%. They don't leave an arm on one side of the road. They take themselves 100%. And that means that that our decisions in life are a combination of evidence and faith. Unlike Harris's idea that faith is something in the absence of evidence. It isn't that at all. Now, what we're saying is that there isn't anything different about accepting the truth of Christianity. The evidence is overwhelmingly powerful. It isn't 100%, but it isn't in any other respect either. And when people get married, they enter into a personal relationship, for goodness sake, supposedly for life. And that isn't on the basis of 100%. You can't be absolutely sure that the other person loves you to death at all. But you get married anyway. What we're saying is, in the case of an acceptance of Jesus Christ, you base that acceptance on an overwhelmingly solid evidence. But you also combine that with a personal commitment.
I mean, I think the best way I've heard it put is, look, we have an eventful faith that is based upon actual events that occurred that can be that wherein eyewitnesses attest to them, reliable eyewitnesses attest to them. The things that Christians believe, the truth claims of the Christian faith, are based upon who Jesus was, what he said he would do, and the fact that he actually did those very things, namely rise from the dead. And he attached to those events promises based upon his accomplishment of those things regarding the forgiveness of sins and life and salvation to which faith clings.
Sure. And we have every reason to trust those promises because of what he's done. You know, throughout the whole Old Testament, you have God saying, "Don't you remember what I did when I brought you out of the land of Egypt?" You know, you look back to see what he's already done, and that gives you a proper foundation for trusting him in your own situation. Incidentally, in the case of Harris's second book, the Letter to America, whatever the thing is.
Letter to a Christian Nation?
Yeah, Letter to a Christian Nation. Publishers Weekly, which is about as conservative a bibliographical source as you can find. When I did book selection for the University of Chicago Philosophy and Religion Department years ago as the head of that department, I read Publishers Weekly every week to find out what books we ought to be ordering. Even Publishers Weekly said of Harris's latest book, "This is simplistic and misguided." Simplistic and misguided. I never came across any language like that in Publishers Weekly. I mean, that's got to say something about the quality of what he's doing.
We're talking about the New Atheists. Dr. John Mark Montgomery, our guest, is responding to some of their claims from their leading spokespersons. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. It's Monday, the 5th of February. I'm Todd Wilkin, and this is Issues Etc. One other question on Harris's definition of dogmatic. He uses this term to kind of blanket any claim that he says doesn't have enough evidence without really demonstrating the lack of evidence. But it strikes me that that little tactic he uses could be used as a bludgeon against any position. If someone states something And you just say, well, the evidence doesn't satisfy me. You're believing a dogma. I dismiss it out of hand. It seems rather a dismissal of claims rather than dealing and grappling with claims.
Well, sure. Dogmatic is one of those weasel words like fundamentalist. Who's a fundamentalist? Anybody farther to the right than you are. Okay? Who's a dogmatist? Anybody who is more positive, apparently, in his position than you are. I mean, incidentally, also, these people invariably say that Christianity is anti-scientific. You know, it's against stem cell cloning. It opposes science and all the rest of it. The fact of the matter is that Christianity has been the bulwark, the underlying bulwark of scientific advance. I, if you don't mind my referring to a couple of works of mine, in my two-volume work, Cross and Crucible, I point out how it was the reformers who impacted the rise of science in the 17th century, people like Brahe and Kepler. I mean, my goodness, Kepler said, "I thank thee, O Lord, our Creator, that thou hast permitted me to look at the beauty of thy work of creation. I exult in the work of thy hands." This is Johannes Kepler. On the matter of stem cell cloning and so on, in my book, Christ Our Advocate, I point out that the untrammeled use of stem cell cloning has produced some perfectly hideous results. Here, Christianity is quite right that you've got to honor the existence of the human person in the embryonic form. I quote from myself, "The esteemed New England Journal of Medicine has reported that a carefully controlled study that tried to treat Parkinson's disease by implanting stem cells, cells from aborted fetuses, into patients' brains, not only failed to show an overall benefit, but also revealed a disastrous side effect. The result was in 15% of the patients, the implantations produced uncontrollable movement, writhing, twisting, jerking. And there was no way to deactivate or remove the transplanted cells." That's the kind of thing that happens when people disregard God's revelation.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Calling from his car, Roger, welcome to Issues, etc.
Hi, Pastor Todd. Dr. Montgomery, it's an honor to speak to you today. I wanted to speak to you on the subject of science. My sister sent me Sam Harris's book, The End of Faith, a couple years ago, and we've had an email discussion over the last 6 months. And I have focused in on the whole evolution subject. And in my way of thinking, it takes a lot more faith to believe in Darwinism than to believe in a creator. I'd like you to comment on that, if you could.
Thank you, Roger. Dr. Montgomery.
Well, I think it does, too, but I would not make that the center of my opposition to Harris. The fact of the matter is that it's theoretically possible that God could use evolutionary processes in the course of his creative activity. The real issue with Harris is not evolution versus seven-day creation or six-day creation, that sort of thing. The real issue is whether there's a God at all. And if I were you, I'd try to take her over to an analysis of the case for Jesus Christ. You know, our theology centers in Christ. So should our defense of the faith. Why don't you send her a copy of my book, History, Law, and Christianity, or some of C.S. Lewis' stuff, Mere Christianity, which could give the reasons why it's far more rational to see the universe as in the hands of a loving God who came to earth in the person of Jesus Christ to save his creation.
By the way, the book History, Law, and Christianity by our guest Dr. Montgomery can be had at the website CILTPP.com, the Canadian Institute for Law, and their website address CILTPP.com. The book is called History, Law, and Christianity. Dr. Montgomery, here is, again, Sam Harris. He wants to portray himself as the great advocate of reason. Here are his thoughts.
We all know what reason is at the level of common sense. We all know that when someone makes extravagant claims, that should be based on really extraordinarily compelling evidence. And when it's not, we immediately discount these claims in every other area of our lives.
Well, then let's use this test, Dr. Montgomery. The extravagant claim of the truth of Christianity. Do you have extraordinary evidence?
Well, it depends on how you describe extraordinary. The fact is that we determine evidence by the nature of what's being claimed. When the claim is presented that Jesus rose again from the dead, we don't have to have an infinite amount of evidence for this. All we need to know is, how do you know that somebody is dead, and how do you know that somebody is alive? Okay? Well, it's not terribly difficult. If we couldn't distinguish the one from the other, we'd be burying the wrong people. So, what we ask ourselves is there sufficient evidence that Jesus died on the cross? And there's overwhelming evidence. There's an article that appeared in 1986 in the Journal of the American Medical Association going into great detail as to the crucifixion of Jesus. And the conclusion was he was definitely dead as a result of this. Then we ask ourselves, how do you know if somebody is alive? Well, among other things, if a person eats fish, he's alive. Huh? A fish burger, the eating of a fish burger is a definitive indication that a person is alive. And Jesus, by primary source, firsthand evidence of those who were there, ate fish with his disciples after his resurrection. Jesus was dead and then alive. The evidence for this is perfectly solid. It doesn't have to be extraordinary, even though the conclusion is extraordinary. Again, Harris wouldn't know logic if it came up and kissed him on both cheeks. He doesn't understand the concept of rationality.
Dr. Montgomery, would you be our guest for a few more minutes on the other side of this break?
Well, because of my natural generosity, I just might be willing to do that.
Well, we know how generous you are.
Oh, yes. Oh,
certainly
yes.
How generous you are.
Oh,
so
yes.
I rest assured that that is a yes. When we come back from this break, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, Professor Emeritus at the University of Luton in England. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales. He's a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's also Distinguished Professor of Apologetics in the History of Christian Thought at Trinity College and Theological Seminary in Newburgh, Indiana. He has authored and edited more than 50 books, including How Do We Know That There Is a God and Other Questions Inappropriate in Polite Society. When we come back, we'll also take your phone calls. We'll hear a little bit more audio from the advocates of new atheism and get Dr. Montgomery's response. Our call-in number is 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, we do have some email to get to on the other side of the break, issues@kfuo.org. Then, when Dr. Montgomery is, when his patience with us has worn out, we'll start audio open lines. There's a Dallas church that, leading up to yesterday, was offering Super Bowl tickets and airline tickets to Miami as an attendance promotion. We'll hear that story. We'll also hear about an Indianapolis church that had wanted to celebrate Super Bowl Sunday on the big Jumbotron and then found out that doing so would be a violation of copyright laws and the expressed consent of the NFL. They were greatly disappointed. Hannity and Combs have an interview with an author who's written a new book called My Year Inside Radical Islam, a former Jew turned Muslim turned Christian, who's written this book, and National Public Radio has a report on young British Muslims that's coming up during audio open lines in the last part of Issues, etc. Today, when we come back, a few more minutes, generously granted by Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on New Atheism.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, etc.
The Golden Jubilee Concert Series presents the Kelmis Ensemble from Leipzig, Germany, at St. Louis Abbey Church, Saturday, February 24th at 7:30 p.m. This internationally acclaimed a cappella quintet has won 4 first-place prizes for vocal competition. The Kelmis Ensemble, performing music of John Tavner, J.S. Bach, and Felix Mendelssohn. Hear this exceptional program with the Kelmis Ensemble, Saturday night, February 24th at St. Louis Abbey Church on South Mason Road. Admission is free, but donations are welcome.
God's original masterpiece, You, is the theme of the 7th Annual Women's Day of Renewal to be held on Saturday, March 3rd from 7:45 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 1300 Beltline Road in Collinsville. The keynote speaker is humorist Jan Strzok, speaking on She is Her Father's Child. Women of all ages are invited to enjoy this day of renewal and encouragement. Visit GoodShepherdCollinsville.org for registration fees and deadlines on the Women's Day of Renewal.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Terry Phillips, sitting in for Bob Dittmer. Many conservatives are getting a laugh out of the latest blast from campus liberals. A trio of psychology professors have published a paper which pretty well charges those on the right with a mental disorder. The profs deny that intent, but among their findings are such things as correlations between mental health symptoms and political conservatism. Josh Montez reports.
Having a psychologist from New York analyze conservatives sounds like something to take serious, but conservative talk show host Mike Rosen found the study's conclusions entertaining.
I have a disorder, a psychological disorder. I never completely realized that, but I do now.
Psychology professor Warren Throckmorton with Grove City College notes the study's authors used a meta-analysis or a compilation of previous studies to arrive at their conclusion.
These authors found what they wanted to find, that they set out a hypothesis in the beginning, and they selected data and studies that would help them achieve their conclusions.
He says the study appears to dislike conservatives because of how they are described, like use of the word rigid.
I might think caution or cautiousness could be a way of describing a very similar type of quality, but they use the most negative terms possible to describe what could also be described in other ways.
If the study wasn't so comical, it would be offensive. So can anything good come from the research? Throckmorton speculates.
You could have a psychologist that specializes in treating conservatives, and might be a whole training program in that, you know.
The study's lead author declined an interview. For Family News in Focus, I'm Josh Montez.
The profs come from Harvard, University of Texas, and NYU. An article on the study is published in Psychology Today. For Family News in Focus, I'm Terry Phillips.
Here at AM 850 KFUO, it's our privilege to salute our day sponsors on this Monday, February 5th, 2007, Tony and Elaine Gerner. Today's day sponsors have made a contribution to AM 850 KFUO in honor of Ella Gerner's 93rd birthday and in celebration of Tony and Elaine's 51st wedding anniversary. Once again, we say thank you to Tony and Elaine Gerner of Baldwin. Happy birthday to Ella, and happy anniversary, Tony and Elaine. Concordia Publishing House and Issues Etc. are pleased to offer our Book of the Month for February, titled A Seminary in Crisis. It's a history book that you won't be able to put down. A Seminary in Crisis tells the story about the battle for the Bible in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in the early 1970s. For more information, call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or visit our website, issuesetc.org. The book, A Seminary in Crisis.
I think civilization is really threatened primarily by the religious fragmentation of the human community, by religious impediments to clear thinking.
That's Sam Harris, author of Letter to a Christian Nation and the End of Faith. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. We're responding to new atheism and its claims. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Dr. Montgomery, would you respond to what Harris had to say there about civilization being threatened essentially by religion?
Oh, I think that there are lots of things that are threatening civilization to a greater extent than that. For example, a lack of sufficient education so that people understand what reasoning really consists of and how you arrive at conclusions, the relationship between reason and faith, between evidence and faith, that sort of thing. I don't see any particular crisis along those lines. And, I repeat what I pointed out just before the break, from Publishers Weekly, Harris's stuff is simplistic and misguided, according to Publishers Weekly. The material is of such a low level that it doesn't come anywhere near university quality. I find a lot of difficulty in spending time with this sort of stuff. It reminds me of some of the comments of C.S. Lewis that the non-Christian material comes, the non-Christian material goes, and meanwhile, Jesus Christ stands forever.
A couple things strike me about Harris's characterization there. First of all, as you've pointed out before, he fails to distinguish one religion from another and the unique quality of Christianity. He, in that kind of sweeping generalization that civilization is threatened by religion and the way religious people think, you almost have to discount the role of religion in general in civilization in the past. You pretty much have to forget history. And it seems a bit opportunistic to me, Dr. Montgomery, at a time of the great clash of worldviews between Islam and Christianity, to say, when people are worried about such things, to say, aha, the great culprit is religion, rather than a more specific identification of any culprits
Quite. I mean, how many Christian suicide bombers have we come across recently? The fact of the matter is that Christianity and Islam, if we want to use the two of them, have very little in common. It's true that they are monotheistic religions, but the revelations that they claim, the Bible and the Quran, are not saying the same thing. And part of our difficulty has come from the fact that we've been brought up for generations with the idea that all religions are saying the same thing and that we've got to maintain exactly the same approach to all of them. Now, if we once accept this, and then we find that in the case of Islam and the various world religions, there isn't any evidence for their beliefs, and they engage in all sorts of questionable activities, then we generalize from that to the Christian faith. And, of course, this is utterly irrational. Christianity is not in the same league as these other positions at all. And as far as the positive contributions that Christianity has made over against the claims of Harris and company, none of them, Harris and the boys, have, for example, not even seen or bothered with Al Schmitt's superb book, Under the Influence, which describes the great accomplishments of Christian faith across the centuries. I've just completed an article on the abolition of slavery in England, France, and the United States. This is a lengthy, almost book-length analysis based on primary sources, and it's being published in Evangelical Quarterly, which is the most distinguished evangelical theological journal in England. I show that humanism and philosophical rationalism were never able to deal with the problem of slavery. It required the impact of historic Christian faith to achieve this.
When does the article come out? I'm just curious personally, because that's a personal interest of mine.
I finished reading the proof yesterday, so it'll be out in the next issue. That's a quarterly.
I would like very much to speak with you when that is published. I have a particular interest in that era of history and the Christian arguments made against slavery.
Well, so do I. And the only discouraging thing about doing that article is that I've always wanted to have slaves to do the proofreading of my articles. And now, you know, I can't very well consistently try to find them any longer.
That would be a conundrum. Folks, let's hear from you on The New Atheists. Our in-studio email address, issues@kfuo.org. Our call-in number is 1-800-730-2727. Or 505-7850. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. live this Monday, the 5th of February. Here, Sam Harris has made much of religion and how he believes it to be the bane of civilization. But apparently there are some religions he has less a problem with. When in an interview he was asked about the Christian worldview of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., this is how he sorted it all out.
Look at Martin Luther King. I mean, he is the poster boy for the most benign and most energetic and socially responsible Christianity. I mean, he is the guy everyone goes to as an example of why Christianity and its connection to morality are unassailable. And when you look at where he got his commitment to nonviolence, he got it from Gandhi. He went to India to study with Gandhi's disciples. And Gandhi, where did he get his nonviolence? He got it from the Jains. The Jains are truly a religion of nonviolence. They're vegetarians. They won't kill a fly. No matter how dogmatic you get as a Jain, you're going to become less and less violent. So one problem here is that we have this one word, religion, as though it named a totally homogenous class of human preoccupation. It doesn't. They're very different religions. Some are terrifying.
Okay.
Some are benign.
Dr. Montgomery, first of all, would you examine his claims about Martin Luther King Jr., who wasn't acting on a Christian worldview but a Janist worldview?
Well, I'd prefer to point out that this is a perfect example of the fact that Harris is not a scholar. He doesn't care two hoots about investigating anything before making a statement about it. Gandhi said that when he grew up in India, the only place that he learned that the outcasts and the caste system of India were dead wrong was in the Christian school that he attended. He stated this specifically, that he had picked up his understanding of the equality of people from the Christians with whom he had had contact. Now, he never became a Christian, but Harris doesn't research any of this. This is nothing but journalistic crap. I mean, the fact that books like this reach the level of popularity that they do has got to be owing to two factors. First of all, unethical, immoral publishers that will push anything, and a reading public that doesn't know one end from up.
Dr. Montgomery, would you clear up just one thing? He claims that he doesn't seem to have a problem with religion if it comes in the form of Jainism. What in a nutshell is this religion, this pacifist religion, and why do you think Harris has no problem
well,
with it? When
it's so undefined that one really doesn't know what they maintain. On the negative side, they were indeed vegetarians and animists and so forth, but I imagine that he has little difficulty with them because they didn't actually maintain anything in particular. Actually, though, Martin Luther King is probably not the best example of a Christian social reformer. I realize that more streets in the United States are named for Martin Luther King than are named for Martin Luther, but the fact of the matter is that King had some real problems. Among others, I don't know if the audience realizes this, and you may be put off the air as a result of my telling them, but a good part of his doctoral dissertation at Boston University was plagiarized. And if anyone else had done this kind of thing, the doctor's degree would have been revoked. But, of course, by the time they discovered all of this, he had become a great figure in the racial revolution in the United States, so nothing was ever done about it. I don't think Martin Luther King is a particularly grand example. I would prefer to emphasize people like Wilberforce, who spent their entire career getting slavery abolished, but this may be a sensitive area that we should not pursue.
Finally then, Dr. Montgomery, and thank you for giving us your extra time, what is the best evidence over against the claims of the new atheists that no evidence exists? What is the best evidence for Christianity?
Okay, the best evidence for Christianity is the evidence for Jesus Christ, because Christianity is Jesus Christ. And so what we do is to ask ourselves, is there sufficient evidence to believe that Jesus was the person he claimed to be? The late Wilbur Smith, Professor Wilbur Smith, whom I knew very well, did a little tract entitled, If You Considered Him. And he began this tract with the following statement. The longest article about any person in the Encyclopedia Britannica, 11th edition, the great edition of the Britannica, is the article about Jesus Christ. You cannot regard yourself as an educated person without knowing who Jesus Christ was. So, where do we go? We go to the primary evidence about him that comes from those who had contact with him. We go to the books which were collected in the New Testament, and there we have primary evidence that he not only lived as an ordinary human being, he claimed to be God, he did miracles, he rose again from the dead, he offered eternal life to everyone who is willing to believe in him. And if we check out that evidence, we find that Christianity is true. And that means that where it contradicts anything else, whatever it contradicts has got to be false. And Christianity offers then the one way to eternal life. Said Jesus, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me."
Dr. Montgomery, before we let you go, I mentioned before that you only have two openings available for your annual Apologetics Academy every summer, this coming summer in Strasbourg, France. Just tell us again a bit about this academy.
Well, we have each summer four top apologists, four of the foremost defenders of the faith in the world, who come and they deal with all of the objections that are presented by non-Christians to the faith and the best answers to these for our time. We limit ourselves to only 20 people on this program, and that's so as to give every person an opportunity to have contact with these professors and also the social contacts that that are connected. We have, as I say, only two places still left for this coming summer in July, middle 2 weeks of July. This is not expensive. It's an opportunity to become a far more effective presenter of the evidence for Jesus Christ and an evangelist when you go back home. And this carries academic credit. You can also attend two sessions and become a fellow of the academy. And we have this summer an absolutely wonderful program. There is an email, not an email, there is a website for the program that people can consult as well. It is simply apologeticsacademy.eu. And we'd love to have people who are listening to this program consider it, because we know that the audience for this program is an audience that really wants to be effective in the presentation of the gospel.
Well, folks, just a few weeks ago, I was speaking someplace in Wyoming. I spoke with someone who was just as excited as they could possibly be, because they were going to get to attend the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights this very summer, July the 10th through the 21st in Strasbourg, France. They had all sorts of questions about it. Teaching at this summer's academy, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, of course, Craig Parton, he's also another regular there, Dr. Fritz Bowie, and Dr. Angus Manouge, all, by the way, regular guests here on Issues, etc. It's the 11th annual European Summer Study Session of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, July the 10th through the 21st in Strasbourg, France. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click the What's New section. Scroll down, and you'll find a direct link to all the information that you need there. And as I said before, only two openings for this summer left. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is Professor Emeritus of the University at Luton in England. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He is Distinguished Professor of Apologetics and the History of Christian Thought at Trinity College and Theological Seminary in Newburgh, Indiana, and he's authored and edited more than 50 books, including How Do We Know That There Is a God and Other Questions Inappropriate in Polite Society. Dr. Montgomery, thank you for being our guest, and thanks for the extra time.
You're most welcome.
Well, oh my goodness, I'm almost a little worn out after that. You get a little taste there. Let me tell you a little something about that academy before we go on to audio open lines. If you listen to this program regularly, I know that many of you listen because we have guests just like Dr. Montgomery. When you listen to this program regularly and you're done with a marathon session like we just did with Dr. Montgomery on new atheism or any other subject, and you say to yourself, man, there's almost too much there for me to take in an hour and 20 minutes of radio. Well, we're in the same boat, same here with me, but imagine that times 100 when you actually get to sit at the feet of a Christian apologist and teacher like Dr. Montgomery for longer sessions, going into much more detail as he teaches at that academy. That was kind of an eye-opener for me last summer in Strasbourg. I do encourage you, our website address, issuesetc.org, look under the What's New section. Well, yesterday was, among other things, although you wouldn't know by attending many churches, it was, among other things, Super Bowl Sunday. For many churches, that was the day they were celebrating. There were football themes, there was basically Sunday morning was a big lead up to the Super Bowl party. Here during Audio Open Lines, we're going to hear a piece about a church that tried to have a Super Bowl party, but their screen was too big. But before that, there was a Dallas church that offered Super Bowl tickets with airfare as an attendance promotion. Now, you'll hear in this piece the rationale behind doing this. It's basically about marketing. Here's the story from CBS. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org.
Well, it's a ticket some can only dream about, but tonight a North Texas man is heading to Miami after winning two free tickets to the Super Bowl. More than 4,000 filled out entry forms at Fellowship Church in Grapevine. New tonight at 10, CBS 11's Raquel Eatman takes a look at promotions within the church and how some say they could send mixed messages.
For most people, it's the gift of a lifetime.
Where else can you get Super Bowl tickets at a church?
But only one could reap the rewards. It was no ordinary Saturday service at Fellowship Church in Grapevine. Pastor Ed Young kicked off a new series on happiness. No title, just the symbol. But it was something else that had everyone talking.
Two Super Bowls.
Last week, the church kicked off a huge promotion, giving away two free tickets to the Super Bowl in Miami, with hotel and airfare included. Hundreds participated. Pastor Young believes this is an effective way to draw people into his church.
I think the church should be the number one entity in the universe as far as on the bleeding edge of marketing. I think that we should be ahead of businesses and even the media and professional sports teams because we have the greatest product in the world.
But should church leaders use promotional strategies to entice people in?
It's the Super Bowl, but it's not the substance of what Christianity is about.
Professor Daryl Bach of the Dallas Theological Seminary says it's okay, but the church must balance it with the sermon, or else it could send mixed messages.
I think that the danger can be that there is a sense a glitz or a superficiality attached to what is going on that might detract from the substance of the Christian message.
They're going to hear the message if they get Super Bowl tickets or not, and that's what it's all about.
Big football fan.
Who are you cheering for?
I'm cheering for the Bears. The Bears.
Well, that is one lucky guy right there. Now, Miller will be flying off to Miami tomorrow morning, and he told us he has no idea who he will take. Now, Professor Bach says when it comes down to this particular event, the church did do the right thing by giving a gift to someone else. We're live in Dallas. Raquel Eatman, CBS 11 News.
Okay. Can you imagine this? It's Pentecost Sunday. St. Peter and the Apostles. They've got a crowd in front of them. By the way, just look it up in Acts chapter 2. Pentecost Sunday, Peter says, I'll tell you what, I got a great deal for you. Free chariot fare, and if you want to take a boat, we'll supply that too. Free passage on a boat for the Olympic Games, and two tickets to the games themselves. Oh, and by the way, Jesus died and rose again. See, I did it. I got them in with the free tickets to the Olympic Games, and then I gave them the message. Can you imagine it? Why didn't, if the pastor here in this piece is right, that the church should be out on he calls it the bleeding edge of marketing, why don't we see the apostles doing it? What do you think about the church's promotion? Maybe you agree with it. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We're so often told, whatever it takes. Whatever it takes to bring people in. And once we get them in with the bait, we'll pull the switch and we'll give them the message of Jesus Christ. Is that the way it ought to work? Whatever it takes. A church full on Sunday morning. Why? Apparently 4,000 signed up full on Sunday morning because one of them was going to get two tickets to the Super Bowl. I'd like to know, after the guy went to the Super Bowl and his team lost, I'd like to know what he did hear at that church, if he heard anything, except You've won two tickets to the Super Bowl. Come on down. Do you think that churches should offer attendance incentives like this, attendance prizes to bring people in? I mean, after all, if you're going to, you really got to go for things like Super Bowl tickets, trips to Vegas, how about a Hawaiian cruise? I mean, there's all sorts of possibilities here. And if the church's priorities are really in the right place, they should spare no expense. How about free tickets to Paris for a week for attending church? If you come in, you'll sign up, and if you're chosen, after all, you got 1 in 4,000 chance of getting a free trip to Paris for just showing up in church. After all, they say whatever it takes. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address issues etc@kfuo.org. It's audio open lines. I want to know what you think about this church offering, there in Dallas, offering two tickets to the Super Bowl. All you got to do is show up in church and sign up. I imagine one of the things they're not teaching at Christ Academy this summer at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, is the latest marketing technique. They're teaching, I don't know, more outdated things like preaching Christ and Him crucified, caring as a pastor for people whose real problem is not that they really can't afford Super Bowl tickets. Their problem is they are sinners and under God's judgment. Christ Academy is a 2-week residential program for high school-aged men who are considering the possibility of studying for the pastoral ministry. You can find out more by going to our website, issuesetc.org. Christ Academy this summer is June the 17th through the 30th. Issuesetc.org, their logo is right there at our homepage. Or you can call Concordia Theological Seminary, 1-800-481-2155. 1-800-481-2155, Christ Academy. Phil calls from his car. Hi, Phil.
Hi. If one person in that whole crowd actually had faith created in them, it might be worth it. But I doubt very seriously that they heard a message that was had law and gospel properly applied where they could, you know, hear it and receive.
The sermon theme, by the way, just for those who are interested, you couldn't see it, but the sermon theme at the church that Sunday was happiness. In fact, on the Jumbotron, they had a big happy face. Phil, why do you doubt that law and gospel was preached?
Because of the, just him talking about the marketing thing. I mean, apparently he's all caught up in this, you know, getting people to come to the church instead of preaching the gospel. And, you know, it just sounds like he has not been taught, you know, the proper application. I don't even know what denomination it is, but, you know, to be all caught up in that, somehow he got off the track.
Phil, thank you very much. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. By the way, it wasn't the recipient of the tickets who was exalting the marketing of the church. It was the church's pastor. You notice he said we got the greatest product there is. He didn't say what the product was. That's telling. We'll be right back.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.